This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings.
A very good morning, I'm Georgie Frost. You're listening to Share Radio.
The sun has risen on an independent United Kingdom.
I don't feel like this is my country anymore, that's how I feel.
I would say I've lost most of the faith that I had in politics and in humanity in general.
It's not necessarily a bad thing, because it's very important for the democracy that the people decide of its own destiny.
Well, the United Kingdom has voted to leave the European Union. David Cameron stepping down as Prime Minister after the UK voted to leave. He says he fought head, heart and soul to remain and thinks the country needs fresh leadership.
I will do everything I can as Prime Minister to steady the ship over the coming weeks and months. But I do not think it would be right for me to try to be the captain that steers our country to its next destination.
I'm joined this morning from the team from the financial website This Is Money for our weekly catch-up in partnership with NS&I, joined today on this historic day by editor Simon Lambert and consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce. Now, the Shadow Cabinet's meeting to discuss the results, which saw most people in England and Wales wanting to quit the Union, while Northern Ireland and Scotland voted to stay. Former SNP leader Alex Salmond thinks it could lead to another independence referendum in Scotland. In Northern Ireland, Sinn Féin's calling for a vote on removing the Irish border. Now, the Spanish government says it wants shared sovereignty over Gibraltar following the UK's decision to leave the EU. Nearly 96% of those living in the British territory voted to remain. The results of the referendum had a huge impact on the markets. More than £120 billion was wiped off the value of the UK's top 100 companies shortly after the London stock market opened this morning. Now, I should point out, very good morning, Simon. A very good morning, Lee. This is a weekly podcast, so other people will be listening to this throughout the week. Lots more reaction we expect, indeed, in the days, the weeks, the months to come. This is your initial reaction. You are waking up this morning. What did you think?
I thought, wow. Initially, I actually thought that it was the other way. I looked at the results. It said remain 70-something%, leave 20-something%. Then I realised I was looking at a London borough on the television, and actually the result was leave 52%, remain 48%. And that wasn't the result that was forecast last night. You know, when I arrived home yesterday evening at 9 o'clock, Nigel Farage was apparently doing his turn saying that he thought that they'd lost it, which I thought was a little bit odd, actually, and a bit suspicious. But that changed overnight. And the market is described as a weighing machine. And over this week, the weighing machine broke, basically, because everybody decided that we were going to vote to remain. We saw the pound put in a decent performance against the dollar and the euro. We saw the FTSE put in a decent performance. And then you've seen big moves this morning, basically because traders bet big the wrong way yesterday and the day before, and they've been rushing to cover that. So they've been rushing to ditch stuff. But what's really interesting is before 7:30 this morning, before the market opened, when we were working on stuff, you know, we were talking about the market opening 10% down, the pound being 10% down against the dollar. The market opened 8% down. It bounced back. It's bounced back a bit since then. The pound's bounced back a bit since the dollar as well. So you can see that kind of short-term volatility and overreaction. Now, what happens over the next few weeks is going to be the really interesting stuff.
It is indeed. Lee, what was your reaction?
I woke up this morning, Georgie, and I thought, I couldn't believe it. You know, like millions of Britons last night, I got into my PJs, you know, after watching the initial reaction from Nigel Farage, almost conceding defeat, which, a bit like Simon, I was a bit suspicious of. I woke up this morning, set my alarm extra early just to quickly, you know, check the inevitable. Of course, load it up to absolute carnage. You know, Leave has won the vote. You know, I couldn't believe it. Really got on the train this morning and just trying to let it all sink in. And just before I got on the tube, I loaded up the FTSE 100 and went 2% down, 4% down, 6% down, 8% down. I got on the tube and had no signal. I thought, when I get out the other end, half an hour tube journey with no signal, what was it going to be at? But it steadied off a little bit since then. And, you know, all I want to say to listeners is, you know, let's let the dust settle. You know, let's take a deep breath. We're still Great Britain. We're still United Kingdom. We need to be united out and we need to move forward. We need to keep calm. And we just need to pull together and see what happens in the coming weeks and months, as you say.
You're vying for David Cameron's job there.
I could be, actually. Yeah.
Brilliant speech. Brilliant speech. So what do you think, Lee? What do you think won it for Brexit?
There's a whole complicated set of thoughts in my mind of what I think might have tipped people over to vote Leave. You know, it was a tough decision for so many people who were still undecided, even coming in, you know, to the vote yesterday. There were still people asking me how I was voting, and, you know, they were still undecided. They didn't know what to do. But talking to you know, people, my friends, family, etc., who were a bit split between both camps, to be quite honest with you, there's so many reasons why I think people will think about leaving. And of course, immigration is one that has been massively talked about in the media. I don't necessarily think that was the biggest driving factor in it, though. I think a lot of people feel like, you know, the EU's been a little bit of a failed project. You only have to look at the euro currency, and it hasn't exactly been a complete success. And you're looking at youth unemployment in places like Spain, Italy, Greece, you know, riding at 50%, and that's some fears that could be, you know, coming into people's minds. But it's impossible. Should we go out and ask, you know, all the millions of people that did vote Leave and find out?
Well, here's Dan Hodges, political commentator at The Mail on Sunday.
We're going to get a lot of analysis, and there is going to be a lot of talk about public disaffection, disaffection with the ruling class. There's going to be a lot of talk about obviously, you know, Brussels itself, Europe taking back control. But the simple truth is, if you look at the course of this election campaign, 4 weeks ago, it was over, and Remain were going to win. And they were going to win because they had had a strategy of, their strategy of focusing on the economy had basically dominated the campaign. And a decision was taken by the Leave campaign, and they were completely open about it at the time, to switch their emphasis from talking about the economy, talking about the sort of slightly more abstract elements of our relationship with Europe, to concentrating almost exclusively on the issue of immigration. And it worked. I mean, that was the single issue that dominated the referendum campaign. Now, I don't expect we'll see that acknowledged over the next few days, but that is the reality. Immigration was the issue that won this referendum for the Leave campaign.
So immigration was the key issue, despite all the big guns. We can name plenty, can't we, Simon? The OECD, Obama, the Bank of England, the IMF, you name it, it was thrown at us in terms of economics, but it all boiled down to this.
I think that at the end of that list, you were meant to say, your team took one hell of a beating, weren't you?
I saved it for you, Simon.
Look, I've said this for some time over the course of this year in this endless debate about Brexit that we've had, that I thought that way too much of the focus here was being put on economics, OK? Mm-hmm. That economics are important, but this misplaced belief that Britain was going to vote with the pound in its pocket and what it meant to them financially. And so the idea was you bombard them with figures. You know, you've got the Project Fear scenario that it's been labelled with everything from everyone's going to lose £4,300 a year to, you know, your house prices are going to fall and all these other things. It wasn't about the economics. It was about a question in many people's mind of sovereignty, as in who makes the rules in this country, who's the final, where does the buck stop in terms of who makes the rules in this country, and immigration, which is an issue that we have failed to tackle in this country over the last 15 to 20 years. And whether you're pro-immigration or anti-immigration, and I personally am very relaxed about immigration because I think people should be able to work in any country and live in any country that they want to. But I'm in a privileged position. I got lucky in life. My parents worked very, very hard. They came up from working class backgrounds. They worked very, very hard so that I grew up in a nice, comfortable existence. I'm well educated and I can benefit from immigration because I can go work anywhere kind of thing. I'm the person who gets the benefits. But if you're one of those people who doesn't feel that they're getting a benefit from immigration, then I totally understand your concerns about it. And I don't think that we've listened to those people enough over recent years. And so I can understand the anger that's come out of it. Now, from my point of view, the thing I find disappointing is that I may be deprived of the opportunity to go and work in any one of 27 other countries. Yeah. I think that's a great opportunity for people to have. But I don't think that we've sold that opportunity to people enough. I don't think that the Remain camp made enough of that. I don't think they were positive enough. I don't think that the Leave camp were positive enough. I don't think anyone was positive enough. And they hid behind economic warnings and facts and figures that meant very little to the people who were actually going to vote. And I, It could have gone either way, and it went the way of Remain. And as Lee said, you have to respect the fact that 52% of people, mm-hmm. and there was a huge turnout, 52% of people said, we want to leave. So now we just need to do the best job for Britain.
Well, economics may not have engaged us before the vote, Lee. Will it engage us afterwards? I mean, let's look at the reaction. At one point overnight, the pound fell to the lowest level since 1985. We saw millions wiped off the London Stock Exchange. The Bank of England say it's doing all they can to keep things steady. Governor Mark Carney taking a slightly more soothing tone than we've gotten used to ahead of Brexit.
There'll be no initial change in the way our people can travel, in the way our goods can move, or the way our services can be sold. And it will take some time for the United Kingdom to establish new relationships with Europe and the rest of the world. So some market and economic volatility can be expected as this process unfolds. But we are well prepared for this. Her Majesty's Treasury and the Bank of England have engaged in extensive contingency planning, and the Chancellor and I have remained in close contact, including through the night and this morning. To be clear, the Bank of England will not hesitate to take additional measures as required, as markets adjust, and as the UK economy moves forward. Those economic adjustments will be supported by a resilient UK financial system, one that the Bank of England has consistently strengthened over the course of the last 7 years.
So that was the Governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, there, Lee. We can play our favourite game again, can't we? Interest rate rises.
Yeah,
are we likely to see that? What are the Bank of England doing to steady this ship?
Well, it's so interesting, and as we were just saying out, thank God Carney and George Osborne were speaking, right? But, he's tried to reassure the markets there, you know, he's saying that the bank has £250 billion available to support the economy. You know, there have been talks anyway before, you know, Brexit's happened, that interest rates may fall. You know, already historic lows of 0.5%. They could fall back further. But it's always going to be a period of volatility, you know, after this. Everyone knew that. And let's face it, last night, some people were making some pretty big bets on, you know, FTSE, on the pound, and of course it's crashed this morning because it's been a result that they weren't expecting. And actually I thought this morning that Neil Woodford, fund manager, mm-hmm. Came up with some very good quotes, and we actually
he was quite laissez-faire, wasn't he?
He did that report a couple of months ago, really took a neutral view on it, and had a look at it at both sides. And as Simon rightly pointed out, it was actually one of the better bits of information that came out in the run-up to the referendum. What he said this morning was, markets are clearly shocked by the decision, but in our view, it is not as negative a development as the market's initial reaction appears to imply. So, I mean, that shows you that he's not fretting too much about this. And he continues, in the longer term, it is my view that the trajectory of the UK economy, and more importantly, the world economy, will not be influenced significantly by today's outcome. And that's quite sensible advice from when you're looking at FTSE falling, you know, at 1.8%, and the pound crashing. People are piling into gold. You know, that's gone up 5% today. It's already up 25% on the year anyway, which almost little danger signs that people are fearful for the world economy as it is. Oil prices slumped 4% this morning. Now, Britain still does have that sort of global impact from time to time. Something like, you know, EU referendum has definitely sort of highlighted our place in the global economy still.
Absolutely. It's interesting, Lee, that you pointed out there the impact that it's going to have on Britain. We were talking about £122 billion gone from the FTSE when the market opened. But of course, Simon, this result won't just impact us, will it? It's not going to look good for the EU.
No, it's you know, everybody's looking at this and going, that is the general noise coming out of the financial markets at the moment. Because nobody's quite sure what to make of it. So there's this, is this going to cause the big one, a big drop? Is this a kind of layman moment? But Britain hasn't gone bust, has it? So, you know, it's not being bailed out. It's just decided to leave the EU. And actually, it hasn't left yet. And it might not even come to the end of its negotiations for 2 years. So heaven knows how long this whole thing's going to take out. Now, one thing I will say is that basically what you get when this happens is a flight to safety. And that flight to safety means that occasionally some perverse things may occur. So what we've seen today is basically lots of people buying British government bonds. Now, you would think, as the financial markets are saying. But basically, what they've done is they've pulled their money out of what they think are risky assets and put it into what they think are safe assets, which is bonds. And the fact that they're UK government bonds doesn't mean that they're putting a big thumbs up to the UK government and saying we're going to buy loads of your debt. It says they're saying we don't like the uncertainty that this is causing and we're heading for one of the world's safest assets, you know, which are basically, you know, US bonds, German bunds, UK bonds. And the two-year gilts has dropped 47.8% today, basically, the yield, mm-hmm. which basically is the price going up, the yield goes down. So you're now looking on the two-year yield at 0.273%. Now, what that tells you is that yesterday, the market thought in 2 years' time interest rates would be about 0.5%. Today, it thinks interest rates in 2 years' time will be 0.25%. So as you said, will we get back to playing that game of will interest rates rise, will they fall? And if you look further out at 10-year bonds, they've dropped 21% this morning. So they're down to just over 1%. So we shall see.
So if you're not an investor, what should you be thinking about right now?
Well, I said yesterday, should we run a poll tomorrow that says, what will you be doing? Mm. Panic, don't panic. we've refrained from doing that. We have, however, run a story from some investing experts who have advised people. Can you guess which one they've advised people to do? They've advised people not to panic, basically. They've said, look, don't rush in. The worst time, people who invest regularly say one of the worst times that you can buy or sell any share is after there's been a profit warning and it's dropped. And, you know, you're either trying to catch a falling knife because you think the market's going to bounce back up, or you're ditching stuff that's fallen a long way and has actually fallen too far because the market tends to overshoot. So think long term. And there is that suggestion that if you draw, you know, when you look back on the line of the stock market over 30 years, you know, this will look like a blip, hopefully. Mm. But, you know, markets are expensive. There's a lot of cheap money sloshing around the world. This could cause quite a few problems. Richard Buxton, veteran fund manager and head of equities at Old Mutual, put out a note this morning saying that this was the world's first ever DIY recession. So he expects us to go into recession. But longer term, you know, a lot of investors are saying things will come out in the wash and we'll probably be OK.
Well, someone else warned of technical recession, didn't they, Lee? What would that actually mean? What does it look like? What do we mean when we say technical recession?
Well, that's a very good question, Georgie. And actually, Simon is probably much better answering that for you.
It's two consecutive quarters of falling growth, mm-hmm. basically. So you need two in a row and then you can use the big R word. Now, what's interesting about this is that economic figures have a tendency to be revised afterwards. Mm-hmm. So you can actually revise yourself out of recession. We revised ourselves out of the double dip after the financial crisis.
Well, that's what technically recession is. Yeah, that's what technically is as well.
What it means for
people. What does it mean for that pound in our pocket?
Yeah, it means bad news. It means job losses. It means, you know, companies struggling. It means potentially house prices falling. It means everyone feeling a bit poorer.
Right. We'll be talking about those in more detail. Something to look forward to, eh?
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NSandI.com, helping you keep on top of your savings whenever, wherever.
I joined in the studio this morning by editor Simon Lambert and Lee Boyce from This Is Money. Lee, I want to know, first of all, what happens now? The day after, the days after, the weeks after, because we have got to go through what will be quite a messy divorce from the EU.
Really is going to be a messy divorce, George. I mean, I tell you, one sector that's going to benefit is lawyers having to, unwrangle all of the our ties with the EU. But looking at the bigger picture, what this could do is give countries sort of like Sweden, Germany, Italy, and France, they're going to be under pressure now actually to have their own referendums. I personally think, and there was an MEP that came out this morning from Sweden saying, you know, this could cause a massive domino effect now. Mm-hmm. Something as big as Britain leaving the EU could actually now be the domino that completely ends the whole project. To be quite honest, that sounds quite doom-laden, but, you know, that's what people were saying this morning.
Well, not just the EU as well. We're also getting it in terms of Northern Ireland, Scotland. Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon saying the option of a second referendum on Scottish independence now on the table. And, of course, London voted to remain. Are we going to just be ending up with
I'd be very, very surprised if this is not a trigger point for Scotland to have another referendum. I mean, let's face it, they've largely voted to want to stay in the EU, and that's not going to be possible, you know, as part of Great Britain. So they're going to have another referendum, and what the outcome of that referendum will be, it remains to be seen. The same with Northern Ireland. You know, they were more positive about the EU than you know, England and Wales. Are they now going to have a referendum? It's so many questions that get thrown up by this. And over the coming days, weeks, months, we're going to be really sort of picking at the bones of all this and what effect it's going to have on people's savings, their investments, their, you know, what's it going to do to house prices? What's it going to mean for your pension? What's
for
it going
jobs,
to mean
for wages,
jobs, holidays? There's so much, you know, to get through. And I just think today we need to step back, you know, really sort of digest the news. And from next week, let's move forward and let's, you know, get all these decisions made and all of this information correct, you know, and move forward. And just we're stepping into the unknown. And that's, you know, kind of scary in one part and kind of exciting in another part. And, you know, as a financial journalist, this has probably been one of the if not the biggest thing that I've ever, you know, it's happened to me in my career. You know, we look at financial crisis, you know, it's on par. This is... It's crazy stuff. We've got so much to pick through. I mean, we could do with about a 12-hour show today.
Absolutely. You mentioned, indeed, I don't know if I'll be lasting that long, but you mentioned their solicitors. Well, we spoke to Beverly Sunderland from Crossland Employment Solicitors, who gave us her views, because, of course, a lot of the laws have to be divorced themselves from EU laws.
I think, first of all, I don't think there's going to be a monumental change for an awful lot of workers and employees out there. Certainly not immediately. I think that the areas of business which are reliant on money and funding coming from the EU or from investors who rely on us being part of the EU, I think that is the area that is going to be most affected in the medium term. So far as laws are concerned, I doubt very much that there's going to be any major change very quickly. But bear in mind that once we come out of the EU, the European Court of Justice is going to have no say in what happens in relation to our cases, and I think that mustn't be overlooked. But equally, people need to remember that the European Court of Human Rights will still have a say in what happens in the UK, because that is not EU-based. That is there because we signed up to the Council of Europe with 46 other countries.
So we really are stepping into the unknown, a long process ahead of us. Beverly Sunderland, Crossland Employment Solicitors there. Well, several experts predicting the economic shock of leaving the EU would cause unemployment to rise in the UK. That would reduce the pressure for wage growth. The Treasury estimating that wages will be between 2.8% and 4% lower at the point of maximum impact, with a typical worker at least £780 a year worse off. But of course, don't forget the UK will remain a member of the EU for at least another 2 years, and predicting, as we all know, economic performance in 2 years' time is, even in normal circumstances, notoriously difficult. But Simon, the reality of all this is, we've heard about Project Fear, didn't we, in the lead up to all this, how much we'd be worse off, both sides suggesting this. All in all, whether we voted to remain or to leave, we're all losers, if we believe what's been said.
Well, if you listen to both sides, then yeah, you'll be a loser from one side and a loser from the other. I think what's important is for people to weigh up, you know, what this could potentially mean for future prospects. And I think one point which is certainly an issue from my mind was trade. So how are we going to get ourselves back into on an equal trade footing? I tell you what, it would be a good time to be a trade negotiator, wouldn't it? You can literally name your price, basically. The UK government wants you. So there's going to be a lot of that going on. And, you know, these things are tricky, very, very tricky to negotiate. And that's going to be one of the key questions over this, like, two-year period. The other question is going to surround this freedom of movement. What do we do about this? Do we retain it? Do we lose it? But there's also a question closer to home that's been flagged by one of our friends of This Is Money, Tom Beckett, Chief Investment Officer at Sigma. And he said that one of the questions, you know, for the UK was that their view was that the UK economy was already in a difficult place due to structural imbalances and low rates of investment. And that sadly, yesterday's vote will only weaken the economic outlook further. And that's because in the light of all this uncertainty, are businesses going to invest? And the problem is businesses aren't investing at the moment. They aren't investing enough. They're sitting on big piles of cash, and they're finding ways to chuck that back to shareholders, but not into their business. And this goes to this productivity puzzle that the Bank of England has talked about, is that our productivity hasn't rebounded. And productivity is tied inherently to our wages, and we've seen very low wage growth. And one of the arguments is that we haven't seen wages rise because companies aren't becoming, you know, people, productivity isn't rising, companies aren't growing their profits and then being able to reward their workers. And that one of the things is that this is because basically companies are taking the easy option. So rather than spending their money on something that might be capital intensive, investing in their business, tools that help their workers do their job better, machines that are more efficient, new factories to expand and things like that, what they're doing is basically using their money just to buy workers in, because workers are cheap and you can get rid of them very quickly. Whereas if you spend £1 million on kitting out your business with a whole load of new machinery, that's a long-term plan and you can't get that £1 million back. And there's been a lot of uncertainty off the back of the financial crisis, off the back of still problems with the banking system, off the back of just people are very, very nervous about the global economy. And this is going to contribute to that, because you are going to find businesses are in an even greater sort of element of uncertainty. Those that do a lot of business abroad are going to be wondering about how their trade's going to work. Those that do a lot of business in Britain are going to be worrying that we're going to fall into a recession and people are going to have less money and everything like that. And so you could find a scenario where they don't invest and this problem becomes worse. So I think that that is a key thing that the government and that the Bank of England needs to look at. And they need to come up with some kind of concrete plan to try and counteract what is undeniably going to be an issue. And if they can do that in the short term, maybe we can start trying to get some of the long-term benefits that some people have put forward. The best thing that I've read, actually, I think, in terms of a positive argument for Brexit was yesterday written by Tim Montgomery in The Times. And he put forward this argument about the good reasons for it. You know, this nimble nation able to react quickly, make its own rules, save its steel workers, do all these other things that we want to do, that we're a great trading nation and that we could take a big step forwards. And now that we've made the decision to leave, that's the way that we've got to go.
Well, that's it. You talk about businesses there, but we were hearing small businesses say that they're drowning in this red tape from the EU. They must be very pleased today.
Well, let's hope that that red tape doesn't get replaced with red tape. It's just as complicated.
British red tape is so easy to cut through. I've always found the British, they don't like red tape at all.
But what I'd hope in that circumstance, you know, small business owners are at the table when, you know, if there's going to be a new set of rules or whatever it is, that the red tape that they really don't like, the things that they don't like, brought to the table, and we find ways, the government finds ways to stop that red tape happening, you know, and making it easier for people to perhaps set up businesses or expand, or what it is to get the economy still moving outside of the EU.
Lee, I want to turn your attention to, let's talk about house prices, shall we? Didn't we hear from the International Monetary Fund that a Brexit could cause a sharp drop in house prices? The Treasury indeed said they could be hit by between 10% and 18% over the next 2 years. First-time buyers may think, well, that's all right then. Are we likely to see that?
That could have been the turning point of the whole referendum, Georgie, because people might have gone, well, actually, if I vote to leave, I might be able to buy a house, because house prices might actually finally start to come down a little bit. But there's been a raft of experts warning this morning that house prices are now likely to fall because people don't like uncertainty. They don't know what's going to happen in the next, you know, few months, years. And actually, interestingly, Howard Archer, who is an economist who gets quoted, you know, in lots of economic stories, you know, he's been very positive on house prices in the last couple of years. You know, house prices have been ticking along quite nicely. But what he's saying today is that he predicts falls in values of 5%, you know, before the end of the year, and another 5% drop next year. So 10% drop in house prices. But, and this is a point I've made for weeks, it's all could. It could drop. It could still rise. People could still be buying properties. And, you know, the biggest probably impact of it is foreign investors going, oh, you know, this uncertainty, and I don't really want to be buying a property in Britain right now. You know, the pound's falling. There's all sorts of factors to you know, think about there. And that's the top of the chain, so to speak, and that can have a massive knock-on impact to the rest of the chain throughout the whole country.
And of course, we saw a slowdown in the run-up to this EU referendum, didn't we, with people unwilling to buy, to sell. Also, the construction industry, they've come out today talking about how heavily reliant on migrant workers from Europe they have been for decades now. 12% indeed of the British construction workers are of non-UK origins. We've got a housing crisis. Simon, supply and demand, that's not necessarily going to mean we're going to have a fall in house prices, is it?
No, not necessarily. Although I have said for some time that if anything causes house prices to fall this year, it's highly likely to be the Chancellor, who has been wandering around telling people that if we voted to leave the EU, house prices would fall. And house prices are very much a confidence game, especially when you're right at the stretched end of affordability, i.e. they're pretty much as expensive as they've ever been versus our wages. And so a man wandering around telling you that they'll fall if a vote that can go one way or the other comes out one way does lead to people sitting on their hands. Now, it'd be interesting to see whether people keep sitting on their hands. The last time the pound dropped substantially in the wake of the financial crisis, we saw loads of people coming in and buying up property in London. The Europeans who discovered that, you know, London property was 10, 15, 20% off snapped it up like anything. And I don't think we're going to be banning foreigners from owning property in this country, so you might find that effect. But also the other thing the Chancellor did, of course, was he hiked stamp duty on buy-to-let on the addition and second homes from the 1st of April. And we saw a massive spike in transactions January through to March, and then we've seen a colossal slump in transactions after that. And that's the kind of thing that can turn a housing market. So I think there's a lot more to put into the picture than Brexit. And then the only other thing I would say is if house prices fall 10%, mm-hmm. right? Now, that's going to be bad news for anybody who has just bought a house. Lee, sorry, mate. But if you're planning on living in your house for, you know, some time to come, which if you're going to buy a house, that's ideally what you want to be doing. You want to be looking at it as I'd be happy to live in this house or flat for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, that short term 1 year, 2 year impact is less important. And if you're looking to buy a house, then the house will get cheaper. And if you are, even if you have just bought a house now and house prices go down, the next house you buy will be cheaper. And possibly, you know, monetary terms, it will be cheaper. The gap will be smaller because if house prices fall relative to each other, the people who lose out are the people right at the top, the people who, when they, you know, when if they sell up, they're not going to be moving into another house. Mm-hmm. That's where you lose the money. But I think that some form of slowdown in house prices, at least, maybe even a little bit of falls, but hopefully without too much pain for people, wouldn't be a bad thing for the country, because expensive housing is one of the things that causes our economy real problems.
One other issue that I want to discuss with you, and during the referendum campaign, the Prime Minister said the so-called triple lock for state pensions would be threatened by a UK exit. Let's get former Pensions Minister Steve Webb's view on the economy now we've left.
I think there's a big distinction to make between the short-term impact of Britain leaving the EU and the long-term. I think in the coming days, we're going to see great turbulence. We're going to see sterling falling, stock markets falling. And we kind of know that because every time the polls have seemed to point in that direction, we've had a foretaste over the last few weeks. So I think it's going to be a rocky period of weeks. It might be in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, you know, the economy does pretty much as it would always have done. And so, you know, for people who are investing for pensions for the long term, it's probably not a great idea to make sort of panicky reactions and to start moving money around on a very short-term basis. But clearly, people are going to need to keep their nerve over the coming days and weeks, because it's going to be uncharted territory for the UK.
Well, that was former Pensions Minister. And this is Money Agony Uncle for Pensions, Steve Webb. So, Simon, Tanya Jeffries has been looking into this issue for us. What will happen to our pensions? Give us a rundown, if you would.
Well, so there's a couple of things that, you know, we've got questions over. The triple lock that Steve was talking about there, this was a big thing for the Tories. Are they going to take the axe to it? I don't think so, to be perfectly honest. Investment returns, basically, that's an issue. You know, certainly over the short term, stock market falls, people's pensions get hit. If you're investing and you're comfortably at the right end of the accumulation stage, i.e. you've got many, many years to go, then it will affect you much less because you've got many years to build up growth and also reinvest those dividends, people. If you are much closer to retirement, or you're someone who's retired with pension freedom and has their money that they're drawing an income on, and you need to be spending some of that capital, then that is more of an issue for you. So you need to try and avoid spending that capital. Interest rates, if they fall, knock-on impact on pensions, that could send annuity rates even further down. Many people would question, annuity rates are so bad, many people would say, how could they get any worse? But, you know, they could go further down. Expats and frozen pensions. Well, we've got this funny situation where there's this list of countries that expats live in where their pension doesn't get uprated by inflation, which I think is a pretty poor show, to be honest. And I think they should have done something about this a long time ago. Many of them are ex-Commonwealth countries. Now, those people living in the EU see their pensions rise. Could we expand that list of countries where we don't raise it by inflation? I find that highly unlikely. We think common sense will probably prevail there. And then finally, pension tax relief. If you cast your mind back to before everyone went completely bananas about Brexit, there was a big row about pension tax relief. Was George Osborne going to cut it in the budget, hack it back for 40% taxpayers? He can that in the end. One of the suggestions was that he didn't want to upset people before the EU referendum vote or add an extra level of complication. But now we've got the EU referendum vote out of the way. Will he go back to that idea, declaring that we need to find some more money? He's already threatened us with an income tax hike. So, yeah, those are the threats, really. What could happen?
So on the morning that the UK voted to leave the EU, Prime Minister David Cameron steps down. Where now for the future of the UK? Where now for the future of the EU? Lee, to you first. Sum up for us.
We're going to need a new Prime Minister, aren't we?
You've already put your claim earlier in the show. I did note that.
I think David Cameron's been very sensible. Like Simon said at the start of the show, I would have preferred it if he didn't step down. I actually think he's been a pretty solid, good Prime Minister. But he's given it till October for the Tory conference, I believe. Who the next Prime Minister is going to be is obviously going to be some speculation on that until that gets decided. That's going to fill plenty of column inches, I'm sure. And as I mentioned, where does this leave other countries that are under pressure to have a referendum when they see, Britain, one of the big players in the EU, now stepping out of the game? So, Georgie, it's going to be an exciting, few months. I'd just strap in and just ride it and see what happens. Who knows?
No, absolutely. We thought the Euros were the only show in town. Clearly not. Simon?
Oh, who put Roy Hodgson in charge of the EU referendum, eh? Honestly. I think that we should learn a valuable lesson from this entire thing. I think we should learn a valuable lesson from the mudslinging and the fact that both sides have far from covered themselves in glory and that the people have been very, very upset about how it's been run. And I think that politicians should learn that lesson. And I think people should reflect on it themselves as they possibly are on the losing side and cast their sort of, aspersions around about the winning side or vice versa. I think we should all shake hands and basically get on with doing what's best for Britain.
Editor Simon Lambert and Lee Boyce from This Is Money, thank you so much for joining us.
This Is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, looking after the nation's savings for over 150 years.